Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And we're going to transition from sad to happy on the show today. Sad with the passing of George Curry, the legendary Berwick football coach. We'll have three guests on in the show in the next half hour to talk about this. And happy at 180 of that is the retirement today of Mike the Mailman from Penn State. After 48 years, a beloved figure. There are many students in the Valley who along the way have encountered Mike the Mailman, and we will have him on the show today in the final half hour. A little different, Sean, but when you do something for 48 years and you've had the impact that he's had, and there are people up and down the Valley that have gone to Penn State and encountered him, and he is a beloved figure.
An absolute fixture just as much as the Penn State Creamery ice cream, no doubt about it.
Yes, so we're going to have Mike on in the final half hour today. Looking forward to that very much. George Curry had ALS, 71 years of age, 455 wins, but the impact goes beyond wins and losses, whether he was at Lake Lehman, Valley West, or at Berwick. He impacted lives. That's what we're talking about with Mike the Mailman. Mike impacts lives. It may be just with a smile or a joke, but you become a beloved figure because you impact lives. George Curry impacted lives. And I talked to George maybe, I don't know, six, seven, eight times in my life when he'd go to a Penn State football practice, and he and I would chit-chat for maybe 15, 20 minutes at a pop. And I just really genuinely liked him, and I respected him very much, very much. And what he did at Berwick is legendary for a reason, and not just because of the wins, because of everything else that he accomplished along the way and the lives that he impacted to get to make sure that people were on the best path. That is, you know, that's what we're talking about. And we will talk with three guests in the next half hour about the passing of the legendary George Curry. More than that, plenty of other items to deal with today, including Mike the Mailman. We'll talk with him. We'll also have on today Patrick James, who covers North Carolina basketball, about the Final Four. So we're really loaded up today. I want to start out with the Spike Albrecht Ricky Doyle story in Michigan. And we touched on this yesterday with Brendan Quinn, but it wasn't until today that it came out that Albrecht was going to be restricted to the schools he could transfer to. No Big Ten schools and nobody on Michigan's schedule. And this brought with it a firestorm, which has since cooled, because now Michigan's going to allow him to transfer anywhere. As usual, there is the usual missteps in reporting on something that seems to be all too common these days. Pat Forty, in his article, which was well written by Yahoo, and I like Pat very much. I have a lot of respect for Pat Forty. He does a good job. He talked about Albrecht being, you know, because it was John Beilein himself, so what am I supposed to do, let him play against, transfer to Michigan State, now we're playing against him? And, of course, the common thought process among people was simple. Well, if he's not good enough to play for you, you replaced him, and what the heck do you care if he's playing for Michigan State? If he's not good enough, if you don't think he's good enough to play for you. That's a little too simplistic and doesn't speak to the reality of the situation. Basketball has an early signing period. It is in the second week of November, approximately. Spike Albrecht underwent two hip surgeries in the offseason, but he recovered enough where he was able to go through training camp, and he played the opening nine games of the season. I think that's something I have not heard anybody talk about this. He played the opening nine games of the season. The last game he played was against SMU on December 8th. Now, the key with that is as follows. If you go through training camp and you're playing 3 weeks after the signing date, the coaching staff is expecting to replace you. You're a senior. So, yes, they are going to give your scholarship to somebody else. What are they supposed to do? Hold back your scholarship? Wait till the late signing period to see if you're healthy the entire year? I wouldn't. Nobody would. He is a senior. He's playing. So there's not in your thought process up to December 8th, 3 weeks after the signing date's over with, there isn't a single thought in your head that this isn't his last year with you, that he's a senior. Not one thought that, you know, he might need a fifth year. He's playing. You don't think that. It wasn't one point all season where I sat back and thought Brandon Taylor could come back for a fifth year if he gets hurt. He's playing. You know, nobody thinks that. And then suddenly in December 12th, he had to shut it down. The pain was too much. Okay. So he shut it down. Now here's the problem John Beilein runs into. And the Albrecht family has taken had taken a beautiful high road on all this. Really have. The problem John Beilein ran into was the restricted where he was going to be able to transfer to. No Big Ten schools and allegedly nobody that is scheduled to play Michigan next year. Okay. That's exactly what Bo Ryan tried to do with Jared Udoff a couple of years ago. Ryan put down a list of 24 schools that Udoff could not transfer to. Last year, Max Bielefeld went through the committee, as Albrecht was going to be asked to do, and Bielefeld was given his release to play his fifth year at Indiana, which he did. And not only that, Max Bielefeld played very well for Indiana this year. Wasn't the star, but he was a key contributor, without question, one of the top eight players Tom Crean had. Could play a little bit inside, could step out and play outside. Bielefeld played well this year for Indiana. Albrecht will help whomever he goes to. He will not be the star, but he'll be the steady point guard that will make intelligent, basketball-savvy decisions. There was not a spot on the Michigan roster for him because they gave the scholarship away in the early signing period. That's why there's no room at the inn. And they weren't doing it to be cruel. They were doing it because he was a senior who was already playing. He did not shut things down until mid-December. Now, you'll hear no news of Albrecht transferring right away because he can't transfer until after he has graduated. He is scheduled to get his degree in May in Ann Arbor. Here's the biggest problem that John Beilein has in all this. I've talked to John many times. I've been on John's show. John Beilein has an excellent reputation. An excellent reputation. He's considered by many to be one of the good guys in the sport. And I know in my dealings with him, I have nothing but nice things to say about John. Here is his biggest problem in the initial wave of criticism. Who was the starting quarterback for Michigan this past season, and where did he come from? Starting quarterback for Michigan this past season was Jake Rudock, who transferred in from Iowa in the conference. Jake Rudock, 14 months ago, was told by Kirk Ferentz that, look, C.J. Beathard is going to be the starting quarterback here. He told him straight out in January that C.J. Beathard would be the starting quarterback. So Rudock was able to get his release after he got his degree, and he was able to transfer in as a fifth-year transfer and be the starting quarterback at Michigan. That's what made John Beilein's pronouncement about where he could and couldn't go look absurd, because the starting quarterback for Michigan was the starting quarterback at Iowa in 2014. That, from a public relations point of view, is a disaster. That's the issue. You can't look around and say, excuse me, your starting quarterback this year was who? Where'd he come from? He sat out how long? Oh, that's right. Okay, so starting quarterback was Jake Rudock. He came from Iowa in the conference, and he sat out. He didn't sit out a year, did he? No. Okay. Right. So nobody's buying when that happens, even though it's not your sport. Nobody's buying. As for the criticism, well, you're the one that says he's not wanted. You gave away his scholarship. Okay, that's ignorance. Because he was a senior who was already playing. So you're not sitting there saying, we'll keep one open in case Spike gets hurt. No, nobody thinks that. Nobody thinks that in their right mind. That was not the thought process. Ricky Doyle is going to get his release as well. The big man who was third. He was actually the starter. Everyone thought he had a chance. I thought he had a chance. You look at Ricky Doyle's footwork, pretty good. I thought he'd have a chance to be not an awesome player in the league, but to be a good player in the league. He would be the kind of player that would get, I think Ricky Doyle is going to be the kind of guy that would top out in his senior year as a 10-point, 6 or 7 rebound a game guy. Maybe 11 points a game. Thought by the time you get to be a senior, that's where he'd be. So he'll get the transfer. So here's how it works for each player now. Albrecht can, once he gets his degree in May, Albrecht can transfer anywhere and will not have to sit out. That's his situation. Doyle, who has played 2 years at Michigan, will have to sit out next year no matter what, but it depends on what school he goes to. If he transfers to a non-Big Ten school, let's just pick one. Let's say he transfers to Villanova. He'd have to sit out next year, and he'd have 2 years of eligibility remaining. But if he transfers to a Big Ten school, he would have to sit out a year, but only have 1 year remaining. So again, if he transfers to a non-Big Ten school, he'll have to sit out 1 year and have 2 years remaining. If he transfers to a Big Ten school, he'll have to sit out the year, but only have 1 year remaining. I hope that helps. Tribute to George Curry coming up next half hour. Then in the 4:06 half hour, Patrick James, who covers North Carolina, will join us to talk about the Final Four. Mike the Mailman in the final half hour. We are brought to you by our great friends at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket, imports, domestics, microbrews, best selection of beer anywhere. It's the Final Four. Stock up. You're going to have guests over. You just may want to just sit there yourself and enjoy the games and have the best selection of brew anywhere. Okay? Or you may want soda. You may want water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast the peanuts fresh and hot every day. And the pickle bar, second to none. It's all at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I am in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. There's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. All right, 800-795-9565 is the number. Ron in Sunbury on the passing of Coach Curry today. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for taking my call. I had an had an opportunity to meet Coach Curry in a very inauspicious way. I ran against Berwick my junior year in high school in track and field, and tried to beat Bo Orlando and didn't quite succeed, and Coach Curry came over to me and he said, keep your chin up, kid. You're going to be okay. Just keep working, keep working, keep working. And I thought that was just completely awesome that a football coach was at a track and field meet.
And that was Coach Curry. He loved sports and he loved interacting with student athletes. He loved seeing people give effort, like obviously you did, Ron. And of course, Bo Orlando was a part of that legendary 1982 Berwick game where the top two teams went head-to-head and Bo Orlando was the quarterback, and I think Berwick won that game 23-17 back in 82.
Actually, the score was 16-14.
16-14?
Yep, 16-14. We went for the two-point conversion and couldn't get it.
Oh, brutal.
Yeah,
brutal.
It was. But Coach Curry is a legend and one heck of a guy.
I mean, the few times I interacted with him, and I'd say maybe 7 or 8, he'd be at a Penn State football practice. I loved talking to him. He was just terrific to talk to. And I didn't know, first time I approached him, actually approached me. It was more the other way around. He actually approached me, and I thought, okay, what's he like? How about terrific? I liked him a lot.
That's kind of the way I felt, because I thought, This isn't a football coach, telling a track and field athlete, keep your chin up, keep your head up, keep motivated. You're going to get there someday. And I was like, wow, just impressed.
It is amazing the impact that people have even in a chance encounter. And George Curry had that ability.
Yes, he did.
Ron, thank you very much for your very kind comments. All right, bottom of the hour. We'll talk more, including Jim Doyle, Dave Ritchie. We'll all be on the show next half hour. We'll talk about the passing of the legendary George Curry at the age of 71. He won 455 games in his career at Berwick. Then we'll transfer from there to the Final Four and talk with Patrick James, who covers North Carolina basketball at 406. Mike the Mailman retires today after 48 years on the job at Penn State. It may be out of the realm of sports, but Mike is a beloved figure that a lot of people up and down the valley were impacted by over his 48 years. So, big show coming up today. Today's show is brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket.
True refreshment can come in many forms. But it can only be found in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet in Sunbury. Along with their great selection of beer, including imports and microbrews, they have lots of water, soda, fresh roasted peanuts, and an unbelievable variety of pickles at the pickle bar. Look for great deals on wine coolers and your favorite snacks, too. Get true refreshment all in one place, the Beverage Supermarket, Brewers Outlet in Sunbury.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Time for this day in sports history. And then we'll get to Jim Doyle. 1930, Leo Hartnett of the Cubs broke the altitude record for catching a baseball drop from a Goodyear blimp 800 feet in Los Angeles, California, on a day where really nobody else had anything to do. 1972, the Major League Baseball Players Association went on strike. The strike lasted 12 days and canceled 86 games. 1992, players began the first strike in the 75-year history of the NHL. It's a bad day, man. Everybody's going on strike. 1996, President Bill Clinton threw out the first pitch between the Royals and the Orioles. Today's show brought to you by Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. I encourage everyone to stock up for the weekend. It's Final Four time. All right. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, where it's 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Let's bring in Jim Doyle, the outstanding play-by-play voice. Berwick football on the passing today of George Curry at the age of 71. Jim, welcome. It's great to have you with us. Thanks so much for carving out some time.
Oh, no problem, Steve. I wish it was under better circumstances.
Obviously, and people have made, I'm sure most people realize George had ALS. How did he get through this past season with all the struggles that go with this debilitating disease?
Well, it wasn't easy, obviously. I forget what point of the season we're in, but he did not get the exact diagnosis until the season was underway. And it was a big blow to him, obviously, because he knows about the seriousness of the illness. But I have to say this. I did a half-hour show on WHLM with him every week. And so I would meet him Tuesday morning at the field house. And even though he was a little worse every week physically, it was never... you know, how could this be happening? Why me? It was, it was strictly the season. And I hope the players that were privileged to be part of his last season ever appreciate the fact that he stayed with them and gave them everything he had, even though he was literally dying.
How important was it to George to use football to not only get more out on the field, but get more out of somebody in life?
Well, I think it was very important. And I guess you don't really fully grasp what kind of influence you have on people until it's at the end. This past season, the last regular season home game, really an informal invitation went out to all of his former players through social media, and the turnout was amazing. I mean, literally players from all over the country on short notice arriving in Berwick before the game. They formed a human tunnel starting at the end zone, going to the 50-yard line, four and five players deep, and they had George walk out through that gauntlet before the game, and it was touching. And when you see that, you realize the influence that really goes well beyond winning football games. And certainly he won a lot of those.
And he did win a lot of those. What was it about George Curry, the tactician, that made him so effective? Because you're always changing athletes all the time.
Yeah, Steve, he just saw things. I mean, he saw things that other people, other coaches didn't see. I mean, I've talked to so many former players that said we knew everything the other team was going to run. And you know, when you have that kind of confidence, I mean, that obviously helps you to play as well. But I know a couple of after he. His first retirement from coaching, if you will. He spent a couple of years doing radio with us, and I remember he used to get frustrated, and he'd say, well, geez, why aren't they doing this or why aren't they doing that or why? And I bit my tongue because I wanted to say to him, because they're not George Curry. That's why, you know. I mean, he just saw things and knew things that other people didn't. He was pretty amazing. My broadcasting partner Andy and I used to always say that after a timeout during a game, when he's on the field in his offensive huddle during a timeout, the next play the other team should just give up, because invariably the call of the play was just the perfect call.
What did he mean to the community? Because he put the community on a national map.
He really did. I mean, it's hard right now, looking back, to overstate how big Berwick football was in the 1990s. I mean, they won that USA Today mythical national championship a couple of years. The team was hosted by President Clinton at the White House. Nightline, the national program on ABC, did not one segment but two segments on Berwick football. It was an amazing time.
Yet there's always a turnover in personnel. Did he ever indicate to you what the bigger picture was to him in life beyond winning football games?
Well, he was a very religious man. He attended mass almost every day.
I knew that.
A strict family man as well. So he went beyond football, but obviously football was his passion. I mean, even this past year where this horrible disease was afflicting him, I mean, he was just so into the next game and the next play, and it was just amazing. You know, you can say, well, it's only football, but you know, to me, it's an inspiration. It's refreshing for anyone of any profession to be that passionate about it and just absolutely love it. He was, he inspired me. I love the summer. I love the time off, and I'm never ready for football to start. But I'd talk to him for 5 minutes and be ready to go. And I can imagine how that translated to his teams.
It's interesting. Sometimes you get somebody who's so locked in with their passion that that's all they're about. And the one thing with Joe Paterno, for example, as passionate as he was about coaching football, he had an incredible sense of humor. I mean, he could make everybody laugh at a moment. The times I've been around Mike Krzyzewski, that's the one thing that shocked me about him. I didn't realize he had such a great sense of humor. What kind of sense of humor did George have?
Oh, terrific. Terrific.
I found it to be funny.
Yeah, I come out of our meetings after the taping just in tears with laughter from some of the things he said. And I've been told, I never attended one, I've been told when he got up in front of coaches at clinics, it was like stand-up. he really had it going. And I have been with him at a couple of banquets, and he just owns the place. I mean, he was just really, really, really funny and really good.
Why did he stay?
That's a good question. I'm sure along the way that he could have moved on, but it just seemed like he latched on to a place and a town that just fit him. He wasn't from Berwick. And no. when he was hired in 1971, they took a chance because he had a couple of successful years at a small school, Lake Lehman, but just a couple. He was in his 20s, young guy, and to hand over a program that had a lot of success in the past, but was hurting at the current time. They were taking a chance, but he. he just found something in Berwick. It was the perfect marriage with coach and athletes.
How lucky do you feel that you had that connection with him all these years?
Oh, tremendous, tremendous. I mean, that was I've been doing this since I was in high school, so it's 48 years now. But the times with George were just they were just unbelievable. I wouldn't trade them for everything. I mean, Crispin Field on a Friday night, there is just there was just nothing like it when he had things going at their peak, and I'll always be grateful for those experiences.
Jim, I've listened to you many times. I have tremendous respect for your work. You do a great job, and obviously on a tough day, we appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about somebody who was obviously very special in George Curry.
Well, Steve, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
Jim Doyle, the voice of Berwick football. We will come back. Dave Ritchie will be among our guests in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Back, great to have you with us. The passing of George Curry today at the age of 71. Found out middle to late last year he had ALS, and hard loss. We're going to get Joe Robsock on here in a moment. We are very pleased, though, to be joined in studio by Dave Ritchie, the Chief. Dave, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Steve. Again, it's a tough time to get on the radio, but appreciate that they gave me a call to come up, so I'm here.
Well, of course, you know, there's that great link between Shikellamy and Berwick, because they had that legendary 1982 game. Ron from Sunbury was on, and he said the final was 16-14. They went for two and couldn't get it. So there's always been that linkage. What was your thought on, as somebody who understands coaching, knows it like you do, Dave, to appreciate what George Curry brought to the table as a coach and an educator?
Well, I've known George. His first year at Berwick was my senior year in high school, so my team got to play against him. And when I graduated from college and came back to work for Coach Dick Purnell, we played Berwick for 8 years while I was helping coach the junior varsity, and it was a great rivalry. There was never a game that was a sure thing for either team. And Coach Curry, I believe they were talking about knowing everything that the other team did. Well, Coach Purnell was pretty good at that, too. So it was always a battle of two very, very outstanding coaches. I will say one thing about Coach Curry. He never, never would use just one offense. He'd run some wing tee, he'd run some spread, he'd run some options. So you had to be prepared for just about everything. Just a great adversary.
In the end, between Dick Purnell and George Curry, what kind of respect did you sense between the two?
Oh, a lot. A lot. I remember, I think my first year, that Coach Purnell went down to Pottsville and upset them, I think 7-0. And the next thing, when he got home, George Curry was sending him a little gift, all right, because that put Berwick into the Southern Division Eastern Conference Championship. And there was a lot of great respect. Steve, you would have to be at one of those football games in the 1970s and early 1980s just to see the intensity that was between both of those squads. There was so many times that the hitting was phenomenal. I mean, they talk about the old days, and it definitely was a very physical game, and both teams played to their coaches' personalities. And I know Coach Purnell always said the team that blocks the best, tackles the best, and runs the best is going to win the football game. And I know Coach Curry did the same. And it was always, always an entertaining football game.
Joe Robsock played on the initial teams for George Curry at Berwick. Joe, first of all, welcome. Thanks for joining us in a tough time. What are your memories of Coach Curry that flood to you right now?
Oh, he was a great person. A superb coach, and he was way ahead of his time, you know, with his spread offenses at that time, spreading the formations all over the field, and teams really didn't see a whole lot of that back then. And a lot of times we played against teams that had double tight ends, you know, and he spread you all out, and a great coach, but even a better person.
What was your relationship like with him when you played? How different was it with him after you played?
Well, you know, he came in, and I was thinking about that just today. I was a 15-year-old sophomore, and he was about 27 years old when he got the head coaching job at Berwick. And great coach, you know, he put a lot of time in. He was always at the field, in the weight room or out in the field, and any time you needed to, you know, work on things, or he'd suggest that you work on things, so you came. And he was a great coach, and he really, really kept ties of where you were, what you were doing. If you know, he wanted every one of his players to be successful. I can't think of the millions of dollars of scholarships he got for his players.
Dave, as a coach, what were a couple of things that George Curry did as a coach that maybe had even a small impact on you as to how you coached?
Well, Steve, Joe Robsock and I have coached together from the beginning. Joe came to Shikellamy a year after I did, so you might be able to talk to Joe a little bit more about what influence it had on him, because Joe would have been one heck of a head football coach if he would have gotten the opportunity. I just would say that I would want to have the respect of my players that Coach Curry had of his. I have to tell you one story. I was doing Lewisburg football, and George was doing Bloomsburg football. And I remember I just wanted to go down and talk to him. And I walked down and I said, "Coach Curry." And before I could introduce myself, he said, "Dave Ritchie, number 74. It just blew me away, Steve. I mean, it was 35 years ago that I played against his team. And I went back and I told Joe the story. And Joe said, "That's exactly how he is. He remembers and he does not forget." And it was, I mean, I was on an opposing team the first year that he coached at Berwick. So I had a whole new, respect and a whole new outlook on George Curry from that point on.
It's interesting because I know I've talked many times to groups and they've asked who's influenced your broadcast career. And I said, well, one guy was Gil Santos, who did the Patriots for 40 years. Well, for 4 years I worked with him. It was like being in a living play-by-play classroom. So, Joe, when you did dabble into coaching, what were a couple things that were George Curry-isms right away that suddenly you said to yourself, "Look, I'm borrowing that. I'm stealing that. Oh, my goodness, I'm talking like him."
Well, the biggest thing was always be prepared. You know, you always were prepared. He had a gift, and I don't think many coaches have it. He had a gift that if you were playing a really good team, he'd make you believe you're going to beat them. And he just made you feel that way. And the real gift he had of his teams never coming out flat was if you were playing a team you know you were going to beat, he'd put a little doubt in your mind that, you know, they got this running back. He's 5'11". He can run. He has 800 yards already this season. He just never left you coming. You were always at the top of your game when you came out. And I think that's important, that the kids are always ready to play when it's time to kick off.
What did he do to make Friday nights? Well, how much did he energize Berwick on a Friday night? Just him.
The town shut down. I mean, everybody was at the game. I remember, you know, people sitting on the top of the wall around Chrisman Field because there was no more seats. I mean, it was just packed all the time. And then you go to another stadium, and, you know, when we were scouting or something, and you see the crowd they got, and you thought, where's all the people? Because you're so used to the Berwick crowd. And then they had that siren. Every time they scored a touchdown, the siren went off, and then they made them stop that later on, the PIAA did. But that was a neat thing, too, and the fireworks. And it was just a unique experience at Berwick. And like I said, great coach, but even a better person. He really cared about his players. And when you were done, he wasn't done with you. He wanted you to really succeed in life.
You have, and we appreciate it so much. Joe, thanks for the time you gave us today. Very much on a tough day, obviously, emotionally.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Joe. Dave, thanks so much on a tough day for coming in, and we appreciate your very kind, insightful comments as always.
My pleasure, Steve. Thank you very much.
So, George Curry at the age of 71 passing away. Sad day in Berwick. A true legend. And I think what Joe said, he said, look, he got his kids millions of dollars worth of scholarships in their lifetime. Think about that. Think about that. That's a depth of caring. Great man. Next half hour, we will talk about the Final Four. And the guy who's retiring today, Mike the Mailman at Penn State after 48 years. We said we'd go from sad to something that's happy.